told that somewhere around there, someone was speaking and making inquiries. Mm. But you see, others he wouldn't mind. For instance, when we were going on a walk, and as I told you before, this pony, this little horse used to be brought up from down the valley. And so we would take short rides on it along on the walk. One or the other of us would be sitting on it, even Baba. And because it was the sun, Baba even held an umbrella, sitting on a horse with an umbrella in his hand. And we would be walking. So as we were going by, from the other direction, he was Russian? Painter? Wasn't he Russian? We saw this man called Rurik, the famous painter. And he was coming along, Russian, an old man. And as he passed by Baba, he looked up to Baba, and he lifted his hat and bowed. And Baba on the horse bowed to him, you know. Mm-hmm. He didn't mind that, because Rurik didn't know who Baba was. Mm. So Baba gave him. Why, even in Satara when we were there, and we used to go for walks with Baba. And at that time, none of his lovers from Bombay or Pune or any parts of India or anywhere was allowed to come to Satara. We were there almost 3 years. But unless Baba called or something, no one was, it was very strict. In fact, hardly anybody came. But when we were going for a walk, for instance, and there was a sweeper, somebody who was sweeping the roads. And she saw Baba, and she dropped her broom. She came in, and Baba stopped for her. She came towards him, and he stopped. And she went on her knees, took darshan of Baba, and Baba remained standing for her. And then she went back, picked up a broom, and Baba and we went on for a walk. And I tell myself, my God, there are these lovers who are just waiting. They are longing. They're on their toes. Oh, you know, but they were told not even to ask. But we knew that how they wanted to come, even if they came, they were sent back. And here is this chance. This is called grace. When someone can just get a whiff of that grace. And in the beginning when I was talking about how at first I was quite scared, and I'm sure the others were too, when we came from Pune and saw Baba's lovers, Baba's children, as he had said, coming to Marathat and Maribor. We thought that Guru Prasad was it. That's the thing Baba told us about. We can come home and relax. But when we saw this happen, we said, what should we do? They will ask questions. But how beautifully Baba has shaped everything. As I always say, when Baba wants something, he already provides for it. If Baba wants you to ride, he provides you with a horse. That's a saying in Persian. So because he wanted us to do that, he provided us. Because, you know, when you see us talking like that, laughing, being gay, and being joyous, I mean, I'm told that's not the right word to use nowadays. You people have put a lot of lovely words in the English language. You can't say, how was your trip? It might mean something else.
A bummer.
Not at all? Not at all.
No.
But all this is, it's like a different act. Anyway, they say, how is it that you can always be so joyous and whatever it is they feel from us? Well, first of all, it's the continued presence of Baba that we experience, that is exchanged from you all, from us. There's a constant presence of Baba, his company. Another is because though you all are at the threshold, we are by the exit. So you see, our thing has been done, and now whatever Baba wants, this is a continuation. That's what Baba wanted, so that was done now. This is what Baba wants that we do. But the contrast is so much. It isn't that we were like this. You know, we weren't used to talking. We weren't used to saying things before a group. Even now you will notice that Mara likes talking to one or two. Even when she's sitting out and there are so many, she would turn to one. She'd be very at home to talk to one or two persons. But to all this, this is act two, or even if we're in the last scene of it. And, of course, Baba announced that. Baba announced act two 1 year before he dropped his body, 1 year exact to the day. On 31st January 1968, Baba had Mara see them in Mandalay. They were all called over so that she could greet them and say, Jai Baba. And Baba said, don't be nervous. I'm by your side. And he sat there, and Mara stood beside him. So that again, that assured, I'm by your side. He still is. But that was the first. And so in 1969, when we were in Guru Prasad, the first time we were taking on this new role, this new act, the curtain had gone up on another scene, and we were to play our parts in how to do it. But it's not, playing a part is not the right, because we are part of it. It's a very joyous thing. We're not putting this on. As I said, it's Baba's presence that's so much. And you are each a witness that emphasizes, that seals the thing. Baba is present. Baba is present. Baba's here. Baba's here. So that part. But you will see in our very early years, it's so different from the very early years, even before the Westerners came. We who have come to Baba, not for anything except to be with him. There was nothing that we came for except to have his company. That's all we wanted. So we accepted all the conditions of absolute obedience, purity, poverty. And so we were very earnest teenagers who had taken this on. And I joined Baba for good when I was barely 14, when he was in Nasik. He stayed a number of years in Nasik. And even later when we came to Mehrabad and up on the hill, where we had that extremely cloistered life, even before the Westerners came. So we were very earnest. You know, it was, you will see in our pictures, none of us is smiling. It's not like the pictures now. Smile, please. And we're always showing our teeth, we were terribly earnest and serious and solemn about this. Of course, there were the light moments, but they were also in Baba. The pleasure was when it was Baba's pleasure. The work was when Baba wanted us to. Meditation was constantly in every act and thing that we did, because he wanted us to do that. It was his orders. Apart from the basic orders, which were, as I said, absolute obedience, purity, and poverty, there was the different orders for each one, very individual. My orders were different according to what my likes and dislikes were. Yours would be according to what you didn't like to do, but so gently, so beautifully, never blatantly. He as a conductor, as a director, as a... there's no match, but of course he has no match anyway. He's the one and only. So poverty, for example, there was such economy, but we never felt deprived. We felt rich. There was never a sense of not having. Only the sense was of doing. You see, we didn't even have material for patching our clothes. So we were great savers. We would save this and that. Nothing was wasted. And you see, that's also Baba's way of making nothing feel unwanted. If a rusty bent nail was found on the ground, we would pick it up. A rusty nail was found on the walk, on the ground. We would pick it up, bring it, straighten it out, and it would be useful. So nothing around Baba felt unwanted. A piece of rag, but this would be useful for this. This would be useful for that. I still remember, I had those long white pants, always, what do you call it, lenga, as I have now. And Baba's order was that we were never to wear a torn garment at any time. If our dress or any apparel had a tear, we had to immediately go and change. And then later darn it, patch it, and only then wear it. So I still remember, I didn't have a white patch for my white Langham pens. So I happened to put a printed red one. And at that time, Adi Senior's mother, Gulmai, was with us for some time. And I was there. I dropped something, so I bent down to pick it up as we were going to the kitchen. I bent down to pick it up, and she thought it was a butterfly. She said, wait, 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 and she tried to pull my patch up. I said, no, that's my patch, you know. But as I said, we never felt that we were deprived. You see, having Baba is so complete, so full, so vast, that these things only just are contained in that. They're not apart. They're not standing on their own merit. They have no merit. You'll see one picture of me in Love Personified with Baba. And if you look closely, I look like the maid of the nursery rhyme, the maid that's all tattered and torn. And also later when that picture's of us with the donkey, I took some pictures of Baba and the others standing around. It was, when we look back, it's something so beautiful to dwell on, to dwell in at about that time. The only other time we had that richness and that extreme earnestness and seriousness, as I say, it's like walking a tightrope. You don't look to the right and you don't look to the left. You just go straight, you know, your concentration, your focus is wholly on Baba, not even on each other. We were like, how shall I say, like an open umbrella. You've seen the spokes? Oh, they're all connected with the very center, but they don't touch each other. Our attachment wasn't even to each other except in the concern. You know, loving, we loved each other, but that doesn't mean we were being loving in the sense. In fact, Baba would, even when we were in Nasik, we didn't touch each other. We girls. I say girls because that's what we were then. Mm-hmm. Except to minister to somebody's health or when the need is aroused. But not just being loving for loving's sake. No, that wasn't... So as I said, the whole concentration focus of whatever we had, whatever effort we made, was only for Baba, always for Baba. And therefore it was that intense earnestness. Sometimes I like for the new life also, the term I've used is, it's like hanging on to a cliff. You don't think of anything else at the time. That's the way to hang on to him. But this intensity we also experienced in the new life later. But I tell you, along with that, there was this freedom, this feeling of freedom, not this imitation freedom or a miniature freedom, not this, by imitation I mean, you think you renounce everything and be free and put on a long robe and shirk your responsibilities, or you're in a mood for giving up everything. Not that, and not even a miniature freedom. It was like a breeze coming from an ocean of freedom. It was so large that along with that intensity, along with that focus absolutely on Baba and not to make a false step any time, which were the conditions of the new life, but this, along with this, there was this freedom. I tell you, now I can look back and say, oh, let's have the new life, 1,000 times the new life, and being with Baba and the way that new life was. And if that freedom that I'm trying to describe or talk about is to happen, because anything that Baba plants or starts or lays the seed of is going to blossom 1,000 times in future or even in a number of years, as we have seen other things happening, if that freedom is really to be for all the world, I can imagine what that time must be. Because this freedom is bigger than life. It has nothing to do with life. It's bigger than life. And maybe that's going to happen. That won't just be a breeze that we felt a whiff of. It'll be a wind that will spread all over. And that will be something. Then nothing matters. It's not that one needn't desire But one wouldn't desire, because there's no room for other desires. This is so complete, so whole, so total, in that freedom. And that's the only answer. And I could see that. That's why Baba said, the new life will live on, even when there's none to live it. My poor Johanna and Alitia. I was started talking about the circus. But you know, we had a lot of animals in the new life. You know that? You see the pictures of these two camels here, Johanna? And I put a little flower on top of their heads each day when I put flowers at Baba's feet. And by the chair, on the cushion by Baba's chair here. So I always put one flower for each camel, because we had also a camel in the new life. As I say, the four-footed companions were there equally like the two-footed ones. And his name was Bholaram, and he had this beautiful silver bell round his neck that Maji had given, and he had brought it from Iran when he came over from Iran. And that's the bell that Aluba rings. When it's time for you all to leave by the bus, when it's time to leave Marazal, you hear that big bell, tananong, tananong. Well, Bholaram had it around his neck in the new life, and he had this beautiful camel cart that he pulled along. And what do you think the camel cart held? Mostly it was the fodder for the other animals, the horse and the cows and the donkeys and all the other animals. But it was so elegant just to see that camel with that cart going along. The horse, oh, the horse. Don't make me tell you about the white horse. The white horse in the new life. Of course, Eris has told you then this side of the story, which she can tell better, how when we were in the new life, how even without being told who Baba is, when Baba would say, go ask for this, or, you know, for accommodation. Will you accommodate my elder brother and his party of 26 and 430, and feed them and send food and this and that. They always said, yes, yes. Mm. So we were accommodated in this beautiful place. I would say palace. This was in Banaras. The floors were of marble. There was a lovely balcony, and the balcony was upheld as it were, by these carved stone elephant heads, and all very grand, very grandiose. Not very convenient, though, the bathrooms and things were concerned, it's a beautiful place, and that's where we made the puppets. That's where I started making the puppets, because Baba said at that time that you must, now you will have to earn in the new life. So the manner, of course, making the clarified butter, ghee, he has told you about that, in the mid heat in Delhi, over those big fires when they had to heat that butter and make it into clarified tea. We women were told to make some other things. So anyway, but this was on the road. The tea and the other embroidery things and blankets and things that we made, that was in Dehradun. But this was while on the road, Baba said, why not do the puppets? Now, Mani could stand up and give a show of the puppets, and the people who are standing around will each give one anna, two anna, whatever it is, you see? And that's how it will end. So, of course, we took it seriously, and we were doing the puppet thing then. But at that time, the food, they wanted to give us much more than what Baba allowed. But Baba said, no. In the afternoon, it would always be dal and rice. In the evening, potatoes. I mean, we loved plain dal and rice. How often we've told each other, my, I could have dal and rice every day, just every day. But I tell you, it's no joke when it's just dal and rice and no vegetable with it, no chutney with it, no. But, so when we were in Benares, imagine, at that time Baba hadn't given the restrictions, but their way is different from our way. So along with the tea in the morning, we had spinach and chapati. Now, we can't take spinach and chapati. With tea, that's not our breakfast, you know. All we'd like was a piece of toast. But it was done with so much love. It was such good quality. And then, for your honored guests, or for auspicious occasions, they set scent the rice. You know, the rice, they flavor it with a kind of a scent that we're not used to it. The most expensive sweets up there in the north are the ones that are scented, even the sweets. And we just put one in the mouth and we give it to somebody else. You know, we're not used to that. So this rice that came would have that scent of it. So I was not well once. I had these cramps. It was usual with me, monthly cramps. And I was really miserable. And you couldn't have a cup of tea anytime you wanted it or have anything. So Gaurav said, but Mani, you're feverish and you're in so much pain. What are you going to eat? I said, it's all right, Gaurav. I'll just have some plain rice when it comes in the afternoon. Of course, I won't take the dal or the potatoes. I'll just have some rice. So she gave me some rice, and I was so happy when I put it in my mouth. There was scent. It was like incense. So, oh, no, I couldn't. But you see, how Baba, on the one hand, here we are, so pampered that we're not even cooking. The food, rich, good food is coming from outside, and yet the other side of the curtain is that we can't eat it. So anyway, we had to, and the men had their way. But then when we were in Sarnath, later when we went to Sarnath, from where we started on that long journey, and child, I think they're rather tired. They want to, they're asking us to see if they can.
What's that?
Poor Germans. Yeah? In Sarnath is where all the animals were ready and all the companions started. That is the morning that Padre witnessed. Padre alone was the lone witness of that of the start of the new life, and this long procession of animals and then Baba and his companions, and with the sun just coming up. He said it was such a beautiful sight. He said, My fingers were twitching that if I can use a camera, but Baba had said no. And the men in the white long robes and the green turbans, and we had the saris that first day, but that's about the only day. And there was Dr. Donkin. He's tall and he has that white robe on, and he's leading this white horse. Now what had happened is while we were at Sarnath, those people, those hosts, were providing not only food, providing not only shelter, they were providing animals, they were providing whatever Baba wanted. They just were ready to provide, and they came. I mean, that was something that that could only be the new life. I mean, that was our first experience of Baba's silence. You know, we hadn't said a word who he is, he hadn't said it, but that silence had been heard so loudly, and all they could say was, yes, please, what do you want? Yes. And just supplying, providing. So then the horse had to provide. So two horses were brought. Now, the stone house where we women were housed in Sarnath had a big compound. I don't know where the men companions were. They were far away as usual. But there was a little door at the end of the wall, at the end of the ground, through which communication could be with Gohar and the men, or Baba, when he would come and go. So it seemed there were two horses were at the back door. And Baba wanted Mara to know, to choose which of the two horses we should take along in the new life. Mara, of course, loved this bigger horse, white, pure white, beautiful. The other was a little smaller and maybe not so white, but Mara immediately chose this one. So Baba said, fine. Now, all I know about a horse is which side is the front and which side is the back, right? So when we got the horse in, I was very happy to help Mara, who has all the knowledge about horses. I mean, she's ridden horses since she was a child, and she knows all about them. But I was thrilled to be able to help him. I even sat on the ground, straightening out the hay underneath, just as Mara had told me to. Mara herself was going under his legs and the side, and, you know, we were absolutely at home with this beautiful, mild, gentle animal. But when we brought him in, the men couldn't come in. The men couldn't enter the women's quarters, the men mandali, the men companions. So they left this huge sack of grains for this horse outside the door. So we women went there and carried this grain sack all together and brought it, and he was fed. In short, that horse became a different animal overnight. Mara couldn't believe it. Even when he put him in this stable for that same night, Mara saw all the signs of that horse, and you couldn't go near it. And it was cold, and Baba said we should be careful of the animals always. So here was this poor man. He was really literally poor, very poor person. And he agreed to put this material over the horse's back for the night because it was very, very, very cold. This blanket. We couldn't even go near. That horse became a mean personality overnight. We couldn't believe it. So that when Dr. Donkin was leading it in the front of the procession, I suppose that's the word, right? When we were walking miles and miles, Duncan had the horse. He was leading it. So we could see from far where the men were camping because we were only four women. There were about 26, practically, of the men with Baba, I think that was the number. And so when it was feeding time, first they had to feed the animals. The men also had to see to the animals first. So Duncan would hold this. We could see from far something was happening. This horse was there, and this white figure was there. And it seemed that he would hold this bowl of the food underneath the horse's mouth. And that white horse would eat and eat and eat and crunch. And just when there was a morsel left, he knew that in the next couple of seconds, I will be finished with this meal. He was already turning round, so that as soon as he finished, he can kick down. I'd never seen a mean animal. I mean, we just couldn't believe what could have happened. Then it was like the taming of the shrew. Baba did work through that too. Like he did work through every one of the companions and every one of the animals. Because when we were in Moradabad, after quite some time of wandering and stopping, and Baba said, this horse has to be harnessed to a tonga. Tonga is his white carriage. So, now this place that we were in Moradabad was just one big room, an elongated room. And that one room, you wouldn't believe it, had 12 doors. To this day, I cannot understand who could have made a room with 12 doors. Just a little wall in between and another door, a wall in between and another door. And none of the doors fitted well. There were cracks. And the paint was peeling off, and the doors didn't fit onto the floor, so that and we didn't have beds. So when you sleep, all these drafts that came, and then these drafts conversed with each other. They had a lot of communication. You know, this draft went to this draft. It was all around us, and it was so cold. I just keep saying that, but it was fantastically cold. And we were told just that year was the limit, and. So when we were there, and there was this grounds in front, we had to draw water from a little well nearby. There was a park nearby, so we had a few passers-by whom we recognized daily. Among them were two eunuchs, or hermaphrodites, as you call them. But they were always interested. They always stopped and asked how we were, and, you know, was everything fine, and we asked them how they were. You know, just little pleasantries, little things. So then there was this room was within grounds which had a huge gate. But there was no gate, there was just an opening. I think it was a Mohammedan place. Now, this trainer was brought to train the white horse, to tame it and train it. So here was this big horse, and here we could watch, we women without going out could watch from our place. Came this little trainer. Very delicate and small, even more so than you, Bob. And but you see what you could do? The same thing with this man. We giggle, we laugh. And what is this man going to do? What does he know about training thing? Look at that strong, mean horse, and look at this tiny little fellow. But watching was amazing. You know, anything in perfection, anything. I think even a perfect thief would draw admiration. It has to be to that pitch of perfection. We just sat there and admired this man, this little one who would take the horse and just run along with him, you know, go in circles, running faster and faster. He ran as fast as the horse did, round and round. And then after a few circles, this man would jump in the air while running, jump in the air and give the horse a kick on his stomach like a ballet dancer. And then back on the ground in time and to continue the running. And this went on. It was the most fascinating thing they'd ever seen. In the end, he harnessed the horse to the tonga. And then we would hear, because Baba would come and tell us, you know, what the man said or what had happened. And it seems that this he found out in one day that this horse, who's pretending to be an aristocrat, had already been harnessed to a tonga. He has driven people in a tonga, but now he pretends, you know, I'm the Maharaja, I've never done such work before in my life. And how did he know? Because he would give orders, and of course, the horse would keep pretending that he didn't understand. But if he kept on repeating faster and faster, the horse would slip and obey now and then. So anyway, the horse at last was able to pull the tonga. Now, the tonga was used also in the new life. Baba would send Kaka ahead in the tonga with the things, so to the place where we would be walking miles, and where he used to stop after so many miles, in a place that would be shady, or either in a mango grove, or on some spot beside the road, which was open ground, and be ready for us. They would start a fire. So then that is the time that Dr. Gunny, you've heard of Dr. Gunny. Sure. Now, Dr. Gunny, joined us in the new life. He came along. He was one of the companions. But he hated physical exertion. Not only work, physical exertion. That is why he used to bathe after many days. So when the other Mandali would tease him, say, Dr. Gunny, what is this, Gunny? And he said, you people bathe every day. I bathe every 15 days. As if he were doing it faster than he were doing it. So that kind of man, when he walked that first lap of our new life journey, right from Supa to Ghor Nadi, 17 miles, I think to Supa. And then from, anyway, when we walked from Supa to Ghor Nadi, poor Gunny, this was so strange, so foreign to his, not only to his nature, but to his body, that it's just putting up your leg and lifting a leg and going forward and lifting a leg and going forward and working and non-stop, that in the end, the stick that he had a stick with him, at least that he took as a prop for himself, but he was using the stick to push him forward. He would hold the stick behind him at each step and push himself forward rather than put the stick in front of him. And Baba, of course, was so observant, so sensitive to each one's need, so concerned that even though it was the new life, it was so very straight, Baba was walking fast, so with that momentum, Gunny was being pulled by Baba, the last part. Also, Dr. Duncan, the one Westerner who represented all the Westerners in the new life, there was one weakness, failing of his body, physical, was that if he didn't eat for a number of hours, his body would begin to tremble. He had a big frame, big man, his body would begin to tremble. But of course, you don't utter that in the new life. You don't say, you don't ask for privileges, nothing. You just keep going. So he this is what we came to know later when he told Eraj, and who Eraj told us, that at one time he was feeling so bad inside. We were right in the middle of some journey, walking, travels. And Baba came over to us women, because we would always be at a distance. He came over, and in our little brass pot and our satchel, we carried some things for Baba to give away to someone should he feel the whim to do so. And he had. He would come and ask for something and give it to some passerby. Or he would tell Eris not only to give it to that man, but to bow down to him, like by proxy. It's really like Baba giving, like Baba bowing down. So this time he came over to us, asked for an orange, and went and gave it to Don. Don said it was a lifesaver. He just didn't know how it could go on. Anyway, to come to the new life white horse and the tonga, now that he's in the tonga, and Kaka is riding ahead of us. Because of Dr. Gunny's inability to walk and walk and walk, so Baba says, all right, he says, Gunny, you go along in the tonga with Kaka. You ride, yes? You just sit in the tonga, and the tonga will carry you. And when you get down there, what you have to do, though, you go into the village nearest and beg for bhiksha. Prem se bhiksha dijiye. That is for food, for food. They give you... Good. There would be flour, you know, wheat flour, or sometimes something cooked, but usually there would be like flour, so that we could make the chapatis, or rice, or grain, or whatever it was. So you go and get the picture from the village. Oh, Gunny was happy, really happy. He accepted it like a shot. He said, I'll do that. So when we followed and reached the spot where the tonga was, where the campsite was, and where Gunny had gone into the village and collected the picture on behalf of all, Baba found there were quite a few people with Gunny. Although he told them to stand apart, he said, what is this? He said, Baba, I spoke so well about you and about the new life. They not only gave me arms, they want to join the new life. They said, we'll come along too. Baba said, don't ever do that again. Bring anything else you like, but don't bring people. Don't bring them. So now you have to talk. So the poor, because you see, Gunny was very brilliant. And he had a way of talking that... they just melted. They said, oh, we're coming along with you. We're leaving our family. We're leaving our home. We're joining you on the new life. And Baba said, don't scare me like that. You just bring the bhiksha. And then how one by one Baba disposed of the new life animals. Always when the work is done, the scaffolding is removed. But the blessing that's been scattered during that time is just boundless. Look at Guru Prasad. Look at any other place. It's not that. Sometimes we're apt to give more importance to the means. I've even heard some say that they continue to take drugs because they came to Baba through drugs. Yes. That is what brought them. But it's like Baba said, that when you sit in an aeroplane to come to another place, if you don't get off, you have to leave. You have to leave the plane to get off because you've come to your destination. But if you're so attached to the means itself, you get nowhere. Yeah, you want to prompt, please. I'm absolutely blank now.
She says it's a very interesting thought.
Yeah.
You
have to get down.
Yes?
I heard someone comment about the new life as the avatar starting a second life.
The avatar?
Yeah, Baba starting yes. A second life in this incarnation.
Second life?
Yeah.
I've never heard of that.
Mm-hmm. I hadn't either. It was like, I don't remember now where it came from, but it probably had a conversation at Myrtle Beach or something like that.
Yeah.
And,
it's
different. But up to that point, he had completed a certain phase of work. Perhaps.
That's it. That's the right word. For us, who have been with Baba all these years, we have seen the phases change. But they're all part of that one. But there have been different phases, phases, and different...
Well, that's the way I
yeah, so this has been another phase.
Yeah. Can you elaborate on what Baba told you about the Westerners coming later?
Ah, yes. That was when a circular was sent out arranging... a time of that Baba would give darshan. Everybody was invited. What year was that to be?
65.
And at that time, when Baba had postponed it, I still remember one of the most touching letters was from Elizabeth. A short letter. And she said, "Barbara dear, don't let it be too long before you call us." I still remember that. So after that, when time went on, and I specifically remember in 68 when he said, "I will give darshan. I will surely give darshan." And to my new ones, my children, young ones, I will give to them. I will give my darshan to my young ones. And I couldn't help spontaneously saying, "But Baba, what about your old ones, the ones who are waiting, the ones who are just alone?" "Yes, yes, they also, but mostly to my young ones." Now, you see, at that time, we didn't know there were so many young ones, but this made me feel good that Baba said that. And then he said, "They will come from all over, my children. They will come. And some of them will be gems." And the expression on his face is so beautiful. He said, "You'll see them." I could see a world full of young ones. "You'll see them. You'll see them." And immediately, the smart aleck had a thought. "You'll see them. Why doesn't he say, we'll see them?" And then I said, "Of course, because he's already seen them. He's all seeing, all knowing, all loving. He sees them." So he says, "You will see." So he said, and the expression on his face as he said it was like a proud father and a loving mother. And then we were witness to this when we were in Guru Prasad in the summer of 1969, when Baba said, "I'll give darshan," and all his young ones came. And we said, and most 90% were the new, the young, who had not physically seen Baba. But the ones who had seen, so Baba was right. "I'll give mostly for them. I'll give this darshan, but also my old ones." So it was, and of course, we this was a very novel experience for us. Where did they come from? What made them come? You know, what are we going to do? Actually, when we went to Guru Prasad, we didn't know whether we should go at all. And if we go, what are we going to do? They're coming for Baba's darshan. As a matter of fact, we had never participated directly in the darshan that Baba had given before. We had always been behind the scenes. The women, I mean, Guru Prasad, you see those pictures out there? Those thousands before him and Baba seated. But we are in the what was known as the pantry, behind it all, watching and participating, being ready to send whatever Baba might need. There might be a word from Erich to Gohar. Baba wants another kerchief. The Mera would give that to Gohar, would give it to Erich, who would, whatever. But we never were there. But now this, we were going to be right in there, and we wouldn't see Baba. Where's the darshan? What are we going to do? But I tell you, it is amazing. Baba really gave darshan, and we needn't have worried at all. We were just witnesses as we are now. And Baba gave darshan. He took over and did the whole thing. And as I said, that's the first time when we came and we talked and found ourselves we could do it. We're not speech makers. We're not lecturers. We hadn't done it before. Writing, yes, laboriously I'd written, but this was something quite different. But right from the start, even we were surprised ourselves. And just as Mera had said Jai Baba to the Mandali on 31st January 1968, so at that time, she was the first who would greet, welcome his children, and say, "Jai Baba." Then we would start. And as I said, Baba, my first surprise came when I found myself saying something pretty clever, I thought. And I was so surprised. Sort of, did I say that? Where did that come from? And one of the young ones is asking about not asking. They were saying they were talking of their honeymoon period, of their awakened love for Baba. how they just floated on air and how everything was so joyous. And, you know, you all should know, known as the honeymoon period with Mother. But afterwards, there was nothing. So what happened? It was not that kind of thing. And there I stood on the mic right there, and I said, but I said, it's like when a tree is watered, when the tree bed is filled with water at first, and it sparkles and scintillates and is visible. And then you say, where did it go? It goes down to the roots where it belongs, to the very heart.